The Voice of Reason Broadcast Network presents The Orthodox Nationalist. Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson is a former professor, a professional writer, and a priest of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. His website is russjournal.com. That's russjournal.com. Now here's your host, Matt Johnson.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to another edition of the Orthodox Nationalist. Today we're going to continue with what we were talking about last time, and we were talking about the Ukrainian or Cossack Baroque as an art form, speaking very generally in kind of a pan-European way as to the nature and symbolism of what the Baroque is, what it holds itself to be and what it's a reaction to. And today we're going to get more specific concerning the actual Ukrainian Cossack, not just the Baroque itself, but also the art and ideology of the Cossacks of Ukraine both before, during, and after the famous uprising of Bogdan Khmelnytsky. And I've taken a lot of my information today, and it's sort of unexpected, but there is a website that has attached to it a series of scholarly essays in Ukrainian on Cossack art and symbolism. And it's connected to the Holy Protection Cossack Church just outside of Kiev, which itself is connected to a village, or a sloboda. A sloboda meaning something, a settlement, a source of freedom, communication, discussion, named after a iconic Cossack hero, Cossack Mamai. And of course, it's the village itself is Mamayevo, named after him, and it has declared itself as of February of 2011 an autonomous Cossack spiritual commonwealth within the Ukrainian world. And as of now, it's under the Ukrainian Orthodox Church of the Kievan Patriarchate. And since my own chapel is also named after the protection of the Mother of God, I found this particular parish, which is directly under the Patriarchate, it's not under the local bishop, very interesting. And as I began reading the Ukrainian, both in the machine translation as well as my own, and that can be a problem because a machine translation can be very, very misleading. So I had to take out some of my old dictionaries and start doing some of my own work, which was very painstaking, but ultimately it really was worth it because these guys have collected a tremendous amount, especially of the symbolism and philosophy of the Cossack life, in what we in the West would call the Renaissance and the post-Renaissance. So we're really talking about the era roughly coterminous with the Baroque. So I call this part two of the Ukrainian Baroque, or more specifically, the Cossack Baroque, the post-Khmelnytsky Baroque movement in Ukraine, its art, its tradition, both concerning the Baroque mentality in general and the Cossack and Ukrainian nationalist vision more specifically. The first thing I want to deal with is an essay that these people have put up called The Two Concepts of the Ukrainian Mind. And that these two concepts seem to be opposite one another. They seem to be confrontational with one another, and yet they're both necessary for one another. They are counterparts rather than enemies. And the two sides of the Ukrainian mind, or the two views of the Ukrainian mind, are the Cossack world and the peasant world. I want to say, first of all, that Ukrainian nationalism is attractive for the same reason that Irish nationalism is attractive. It is purely agrarian, and I think the Ukrainians have brought this out more than anyone else. It's purely agrarian in that the cities were considered the places where the Poles and the Jews ruled the countryside through usury, through banking, and through the monopoly of alcohol. And so right up until the 1930s and 40s, the Ukrainian city was not Ukrainian. The Ukrainian city was always foreign. It was Polish, Jewish, with Russian immigrants as well, and was considered a parasitic cancer growing in the Ukrainian countryside. And then only in the countryside can the true Ukrainian grow. And that concept is present today. And I do think that it's something very, very, it's symbolized in the Ukrainian flag. The yellow referring to the fields of wheat and the steppe, and the blue meaning the blue sky. Now, these symbols may have deeper meanings, but at least the prima facie meaning is agrarian. But the idea of the Cossack world is that the Cossack and the peasant require one another. The peasant is the lover of the earth and the seasons. They have many stories about the divine origin of farming tools, that farming tools are as much a part of the agrarian life as the earth itself or the very body of the farmer. And it's this love of labor, labor as positive, labor as good, labor as ennobling. And it's connected with the love of the earth, as we'll see, is the love of woman and fertility, which is particularly important, especially in our day and age. And the Cossack mind is something masculine, where the farmer mind is something feminine. The Cossack mind is about independence. It's about strength. It's about violence. While the mind of the agrarian is calm. It is methodical. It is feminine in that it is connected with the earth, the soil, fertility, and providing for the domestic needs of the entire nation. And the Cossacks never particularly had an interest in farming because for them, independence was something above all. Now, this particular area outside of Kiev, the village named after the Cossack Mamai, Mamayevo, is central in understanding the synthesis between the Cossack world in Ukraine and the agrarian world, because it's both. And it seeks, and actually one of the missions of this village, with its center at the Church of the Holy Protection, is one of the purposes is to bring these two worlds together and show it almost as like a museum piece to the rest of Ukraine and to the rest of the world. Now, when you talk about the Cossack Mamai, he is a person. He is considered, at least by most scholars, to be legendary and symbolic, although there are some Ukrainians who believe that at least some of his virtues existed in someone with that name. Mamai is a Mongol name. In fact, there was a Tartar Khan named Mamai. And the love of horsemanship and even some of the, like drinking fermented mare's milk as an alcoholic beverage, these kind of things do come from, the Tartars. And the Tartar horsemanship and is connected with the spirit of Cossack independence. Cossack itself is a Turco-Mongol word that means freebooter. So it's not even a Slavic word. But that's not a problem because this connection with the Tartars is something very positive to the Cossack mind. If you look at the picture that is featured on this broadcast page, it is a picture of the Cossack Mamai. It is an iconic and symbolic exposition of what he is and what he symbolizes as the archetypal Cossack, and therefore the archetypal man and the archetypal Ukrainian. Oftentimes, pictures of the Cossack Mamai, he is shown in a a pose of meditation. He has his legs crossed. He is going deep within himself. It's the inner man that's important to him. The Cossack is an ascetic in the same sense that any knight serving the Orthodox Church, and all Cossacks, regardless of their particular ethnic background, I mean, they ultimately created their own ethnos because they only married within the organization, and therefore they created their own Ukrainian Cossack ethnic group. But despite that, the one thing that you had to be to become a Cossack, regardless of where you initially come from, is that you had to be Orthodox. You had to believe in that faith above all things. And a knight of the church acted no differently than a monk. While the Cossack fought with visible enemies, the monk fought with invisible enemies. While the monk had to bring himself into shape through ascetic labor to fight demons, the knight of the Cossack host had to, by exercising, through diligence in watching himself, also brought himself into shape to do battle with the physical enemies of the Ukrainian people. Though a Cossack is an ascetic, he is proud of his knightly heritage, and the Cossack primarily is the people's hero. He is the populist hero. And when you look at the facial expression of the Cossack Mamai, or your classic images of the Cossack, it is the inner freedom that matters. It is the guarantor, not only of personal independence, but national and village independence. It is this internal freedom from fear, from doubt, that makes the Cossack knight as strong as he became. And the head of the Cossack host, like so many royal institutions, and the institution of the hetman was a royal institution. It was an elected institution, but it was royal. And that royal status is proven by the fact that the Cossack hetman is a mediator between the world of heaven and the world of earth. He is the protector of the church. He is the reason why the church is able to function at all. They are strongly ethnic, and they believe that the universe is made up of these decentralized subsystems. I'm making it exceptionally scientific, but the idea is that the ethnic group is a subsystem within the global universe. And that is what the knight is always supposed to defend. And that he is, as Cossack, he is the mental tuning fork, for lack of a better phrase, the pitch that the nation needs to follow. Now, if you look at the picture, or the iconic representation of the Cossack Mamai, you will see a series of symbols. The Mamayevo scholarly journal and website has a what I think is an extremely interesting description of these symbols, and understanding these symbols can, to a great extent, get us very, very deep into the Cossack mind. First of all, usually there is depicted a tree. That tree is an oak tree, which throughout European life is a symbol of strength, durability, health, power. In ancient Ireland, it was a symbol of tradition, and it was a deeply druidical, as well as later Orthodox Christian symbol. The horse is one of the most important symbols, and you see it in almost every major Cossack portrait, and is particularly prominent in the iconic images of Mamai. The horse is the truest of friends. He is feminine. he is a sister. It shows the unity of male and female. It shows the fact that though the horse may be submissive to the Cossack still needs and requires that devotion and that bravery in the face of pain, because without it, the Cossack could not function. The horse is a symbol of sacrifice. It is a symbol of fate in many ways. It is a symbol of power and authority, and in some sources, you see the symbol of the horse connected with fire. You see in this iconic representation the bandura, or the instrument, single-stringed instrument, played. Well, it's somewhat connected to a guitar. It is held vertically. It was a means whereby the minstrels, the kabzadi, these people could communicate with the population. It symbolized the story, the people. It symbolized unity. There is one string. There is one people. There is one faith. There is one God. There is one constitution. Cossacks loved their pipes. The pipe itself is a symbol, although it is a negative symbol. It is a symbol of sin, but sin, engaging in sin, not so much because the Cossack did not believe, because the Cossack did believe. He was an Orthodox knight by definition. But sinning due to an effusion, an explosion, an overflowing of virility. The weapons, of course, are centrally connected with the Cossack world. A Cossack without a weapon was naked. And it shows and symbolizes nobility, wealth, diversity in mental skill and ability. A Cossack without a weapon was not only naked and vulnerable, the nakedness and vulnerability are one and the same, but is also dependent. And needless to say, there's no gun control or weapon control laws in the Cossack universe, in Cossack Ukraine. The powder horn, of course, which developed as firearms developed, was also a symbol of male power. As the horse was a symbol of the female, the powder horn was a symbol of the male. And because it was on occasion taken from a bullhorn, it was also connected with that symbol, the ox, the bull, male power, authority. Cossacks were always excellent archers, and the longbow had a deep symbolic meaning. The longbow was a representation of divine power, and that's read in the Psalms quite often. But the string itself represented the tension between the world and the spirit. But that resolves itself in another very powerful symbol, and that is the grave. The grave is one of the most powerful symbols in Cossack life. One of the punishments, actually capital punishment, among the Cossacks. If you murdered another Cossack, you dug the grave of the Cossack that you murdered. You were then thrown into the grave, and the coffin of the man you murdered was lowered on top of you. But the grave, other than being a method of capital punishment, the tomb developed in the Ukrainian mind as the embodiment of the Ukrainian land, again as a unity. The grave was shown as a symbol of continuity. Our own civilization, we used to have picnics in graveyards. The kids used to play there before the development of playgrounds. But and today it seems macabre, but back then it was normal, because this was when we continued to include those who have long died within our daily activities. It was a connection with the tradition of our ancestors. And so the grave and the tomb, among the Cossacks as well as many other people, become of immense importance. And there are many other symbols, such as a spear, the coat of arms, the red pants, which were very, very baggy, the hat, which symbolized the sun. It really was one of the things that made a Cossack a Cossack. And the bowl. The bowl, you know, including the chalice, used at the liturgy, that the bowl was a deeply powerful figure. It was cosmic force. It was creativity. It was the navel of the universe. It was feminine. It was Mother Earth. The bowl, the cup, was something very, very important to the Cossack life. And the Cossack mama is usually shown with all of these symbols in one way or another. And if you look at the picture that we used for this program, you'll see that there is a man who is supposed to look like a Jew bringing alcohol to mama, trying to get him drunk. And at least under the Polish Commonwealth, when it controlled most of Ukraine, the Jews were given full monopoly over liquor. So Cossack Mamai is meant to be the ideological center, the icon of all Cossack thought. And Mamai is the destroyer of confusion. He is a destroyer of doubt. He is the manifestation of inner strength. He was a Haidamak. He was a Robin Hood figure. And throughout the 18th century and even before, the Haidamak movement, under people like Ivan Gonta, these people attacked Jewish and Polish regions. They would remit the slaves, especially in the southern area where the Jews who control the island of Kaffa, which was the central slave mart, they would pay some of the Turkish tribes in the south to invade southern Ukraine and take as many slaves, especially female slaves, back. One of the great joys of being a Cossack was to slaughter the Turks, all of the enemies of Ukraine, and free the slaves that had been taken from this Judeo-Turkish alliance on the island of Kaffa. And to fight against impossible odds, to not reckon the cost of anything. This is something that comes with the stoical inner strength. But the phrase, or the word mama, I mean, we use it in English. Mama is a word, a very archaic word. It's used for burial mounds in the sense that we already mentioned. The Cossack host itself, the horse, the village, the nation. So Mamai may not even be a name taken directly from the Mongol, but Mamai can derive from this ancient Ukrainian concept. The mama, the very source of nutrition in every sense of that word for the Ukrainian population. And these become very important when the Poles and their Jewish economic elites took over Ukraine after the union with Lithuania. And, you know, the Polish nobility referred to the Ukrainians, especially the Cossacks, as goyim, as cattle. And that really shows the powerful Jewish influence over the Polish nobility. And to kill a Cossack, to kill a Ukrainian, was to do nothing wrong. And the Polish gentry essentially were parasites. They did very little work. And the economic accounts and retail and everything else was given into the hands of Jews. And we have gone over this issue on this show before. All right, I've gone a little bit over time. Let's take a break now, and we will continue this when we come back.
away because there's more to come on The Orthodox Nationalist. You're listening to the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network. Visit us at reasonradionetwork.com. Return to the Orthodox Nationalist, brought to you by the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network, reasonradionetwork.com.
Okay, everybody, we are talking today about Ukrainian art, especially the Cossack art during the Baroque era, speaking very, very generally. And we're talking about the art and symbolism of the Cossack world as a means of coming to understand the deepest symbolic level of the Cossack mentality. And for our information, we are taking a series of essays published in the journal, which itself is published by the Cossack Republic of Mamayevo, just outside of Kiev. And, you know, in our nominalistic age, where only individuals exist and therefore symbols do not exist, we're dead to the symbolism that surrounds us. And yet in the Cossack world, everything had a symbol, everything was a symbol, and that symbol spoke to a tremendous depth of historical experience and understanding. The well, for example, was very, very central in Cossack thought. It was a symbol of sociability, of village custom, of the community. It was, like many of these symbols, very feminine. And it was based on the bounty of the universe that God had created for the sake of man. And by the way, it should be noted that, no one was allowed to own a well, because at least in this symbolic sense, no one could own the bounty of God that he has given to everyone alike. So, the well is one of these national symbols connected with the bounty and fertility of the earth that God has created for our purpose. The bridge is another one. Concept of the bridge is the concept of transition, the transition of one life to another. And the Cossack, you know, the Cossack mentality always had to grasp the concept that at any time he went on campaign, he could be killed. And so the concept of a bridge was always there to remind him of the inevitability of death and quite possibly the imminence of death. And the same thing with the idea of a gate, the gate of a village. And you see this with the archway in the Roman Empire, the same thing. It's an entrance. The gate is a dividing line between civilization and chaos. Both heaven and hell were always seen in the popular mind to be surrounded by gates, and you had to do certain things to get in. Even the sun was seen as coming in and out of gates. The souls of the dead went through certain gates on their journey to the afterlife. The gate is also the guardian. It is the beginning of something new, the beginning of new life. And of course, in the Orthodox Church, there are the primary gates that exist in the midst of the iconostasis that are open and shut depending on the time of the year. But even the home life itself of the Ukrainian is saturated with symbolism. The housing settlement, or the sloboda itself, is a microcosm of the nation. It's a microcosm of the motherland, and I want to be clear, I'm using the word mother quite specifically here. It is a nourisher of Ukraine. It is connected with warmth, with kindness, and it's connected with the idea of man having a spiritual purpose. As the village is a microcosm of the nation, man is a microcosm of the entire universe. It has both body and soul. The house is feminine. It represents the wisdom of tradition and experience. The facade represents the appearance of man. The roof represents self-control, the mind, the will. The floor represents space and time. This is where everything happens. And the house, you know, not just in the Cossack world, but in the Ukrainian world in general, is meant to, in some way, represent and embody our idea of the human person, body, soul, and spirit. And these people make it very clear that the number three is very deeply symbolic in the Ukrainian village, or the Sloboda. The Ukrainians were known, and I've seen this in a lot of foreign, especially German travelers through Ukraine, that Ukrainian homes were unusually clean. They were always being swept. They were always being painted. White was normally the color. And that the number three could be seen anywhere and everywhere. The porch, the walls, the roof. These were the three main divisions of the house. There were three windows in your typical Ukrainian living room. And at least in middle-class Ukrainian homes, you had three tiers. You had the basement, which of course was cool and where you can store things. This represented the Earth Mother. The main floor was your sort of human, this is where the living room was, this is where everything happened. This is where our normal social intercourse took place, and it's human, it's always changing, it always needs to be cleaned up. And of course, your the highest part of the house, your upper story, represented the platonic forms. It represented purpose. It represented our final end. And, you know, I said the roof always had this representation of mind, of self-control, of discipline. And then when you look on the ceiling of a Ukrainian home, you had that single very large wooden beam that supported much of the weight of the house, and this had deeply sacred imagery attached to it. It was the guardian. It was almost like the Cossack of the house. It was this powerful, independent entity. The fire and the hearth, which is so central to civilization, so central to the agrarian understanding. It's a metaphor for the family. It's that spiritual purpose that draws everything to it. And some people may say that a lot of these images predate the Orthodox arrival from Greece in Ukraine. And I say, well, most certainly. And it's not a problem that that's the case. I don't believe that you're really dealing with a pagan religion as such, but it is these symbols, these understandings, derived from historical struggle and experience, and they come to identify the people in the villages and where they're from. And some of these things are Christianized, but that's simply a matter of recognizing that these symbols are part of natural law. This is how all human beings come to relate to their environment, especially outside of that nominalistic, quasi-scientific mind that you see in modernity that has removed all symbols. And nature is simply this dead matter that can be manipulated by the elite. The housing settlement was located near a river, and like everything, you know, rivers have a tendency to be personified as this sense of tradition and it's a sense of national tradition, connected with public spirit. And, you know, it's, the river is a paradox to a lot of people because it's identical. It's the same river, and yet it's always changing. It's identical. It's changing. It's the same. It's never the same. And the big issue here is that the river that the housing settlement was close to was connected to national identity because it's the river system that connected villages one to another and created more or less a single identity. And this is very, very important. The forest, you know, traditionally in Indo-European thinking, the forest is a place of foreboding, but to some extent, it can also be a place of shelter. The forest is a great unknown, but when the Turks came and invaded on their many, many slave raids, the forest provided a great degree of shelter. And yet, Ukraine is famous for its steppe, or its plains. And the plains have their own symbolic universe. And the plains really is where the Cossacks came into their own. And it has a symbol of uniformity and equality. Because there's nowhere to hide. A band of people coming through the steppe, no different than a desert. There's nowhere to hide. You have to be brave. You have to confront the elements or your enemies. And in order to do this successfully, you have to band together. So it's about uniformity. It's about protection. It's about banding together. It's about equality. It is this eternal idea of the nation as a whole. It should be noted, in speaking of the home life, the homes are really meant to be relatively small and intimate, and they're far away from the street. The sort of the public, you know, the farm and storage buildings are close to the street. The actual residential dwelling is far away from the street because you want that intimate removal from the hustle of life. You know, the Polish nobility and their Jewish capitalists in this era, they love the idea of the city. They love the idea of not knowing people and having their own community to rely on and exploiting others. That's something that a Cossack and a true moral man wants to get away from. And it should be noted that the Cossack leadership of Ukraine in this Baroque era, and even prior to it, was a very strong trading entity. One of the problems with, or one of the things that made the Cossacks very inconvenient, both to the Poles, the Turks, and the Russians, was that they controlled both banks of the Dnieper. And that's something that all of the more powerful neighbors of the Cossack host wanted. And that there was heavy trading, and a very strong money economy in the Cossack host, partially because when the Cossacks would go on their raids to liberate the slaves, they'd bring home quite a bit of gold, silver, bullion, coins, everything else. And so a money economy developed fairly early, and this became another problem for those who wanted to suppress the Cossack hosts. And it should also be noted that Cossack literacy in the Baroque era was very high. And that was because the church had made certain that even relatively small parishes and monasteries had schools attached to it. Books were expensive, but general literacy was fairly high. Now, another piece that's published by the Manyovo organization called the Cossacks as Night Philosophers. And it's another one of these expressions of the old Mamai idea. Because one of the concepts that's connected to the icon of Mamai is that he is educated. He is someone who knows his own faith as well as the faith of others. He is literate, and he realizes that when he goes to war, he's doing this for a broader moral purpose, having really nothing to do with him as a person. And part of this is also to understand that death is not a big deal. Pain is not a big deal. And this develops in very sharp relief when the Cossacks are on campaign and for long periods of time are cut off from their families. They only have each other and the faith that keeps them going. Money is not important. Power is not important. It is the moral idea of Ukraine, of Orthodoxy, of the village, of the Cossack host. The Cossack is supposed to be humorous. He's supposed to have a very good sense of humor, to be always joking, to show his stoic attitude towards death. And his greatest enemy is slavery, is foreign occupation. And that's something that develops from the Cossack's own way of life, where their primary mission during the Renaissance was to rescue Christian slaves from the Judeo-Turkish slave marts. There's also a lot of evidence that the Cossacks lived, if not killed in campaign, lived to a ripe old age. Some sources even say that it's not uncommon for men and women to live into the mid-80s. They're long-lived, partially because of a very good diet. Unlike the Russians, the Ukrainians did grow lots of vegetables, lots of fruits, watermelon especially, and they made a lot of money from fishing. And so you have fish oil and a lot of vitamin C. The Ukrainian Cossack actually had a very healthy diet, even by modern terms. And their life, their sociability, their reason for living, their intense community life, they had a very healthy social outlook. And as I've already intimated, it's really friendship and brotherhood that connects the Cossack Knights. And so, when you think of the Baroque, and last time we spoke of the Baroque era, and why it is absolutely central to the Ukrainian self-definition, you know, you were talking about the rejection of this calm, kind of balanced form of the Renaissance, of this sort of quasi-neoclassical approach to things. That is not the Cossack life. That is not the Ukrainian life. You know, the Renaissance aesthetic idea may have been appropriate for the wealthy banking clans in North Italy, but for the Cossack, without even the luxury of fortifications on the steppe, all you had was your will, your strength, your faith in each other. That vision, that understanding, that does not lend itself to the calm neoclassical repose of the early the stereotypical Renaissance neoclassicism. The Cossack way of life was so radically different from the wealthy Italian banking families that we've also dealt with on this show, who in fact created and financed the Renaissance and its art forms and alchemy and its science and the resurrection of the Kabbalah in North Italy, which did, as I think Michael Hoffman and others have proven, made its way into the Western Church in this period of time. All of this kind of thing couldn't be further away from the mentality of the Cossack. We talked about the Baroque last time as this deeply intense emotional striving to liberate the spirit from the bonds of cause and effect, from the bonds of fallen matter. And yet nothing could be more clear to the Cossack mentality. That's precisely what they were doing. So when you look at these images, when you look at the very famous monastery of St. Michael in Kiev, is one of the ultimate classic expressions of the Mazepin Baroque. You see this symbolized consistently in the Ukrainian mind. And it's one of these very important markers of Ukrainian national identity as opposed to the Russian national identity. So Cossack Ukraine, you have the very archetypal idea of brotherhood and nationalism. And of course, with the peasant, the archetypal idea of the love of the earth, the love of labor. Both of these entities need and require each other to function. One grows the food, the other protects the village, protecting their mother, in this case, linguistically speaking, quite literally. And that's the ultimate point of the Cossack knighthood, the Cossack host. And as some of you might know, that has gotten Western Europeans extremely upset that the Cossacks have now revived, not only in Ukraine, but also in Russia, and now number about 3 million people. So, again, this is one more reason to consider the significance of the Cossack host and the importance of the Slavic Orthodox world to this struggle against Antichrist and his embodiment in the New World Order. So thank you for listening. This has been part two of the Baroque era and the Baroque mind in Ukrainian Cossack culture. And I will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. The Orthodox Nationalist returns Thursday evening, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time. Join us at ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
Tuned in to Radio.